Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profile. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, Profilers, and Happy New Year. We are back with our first episode of Profiles for 2015, and boy, have we got a doozy for you.
We sure do. Our first Profiles for this year is
Tim Burton. And not only are we profiling Tim Burton, but right before we broke for the holidays, we sat down to interview the man himself, and
so
we are going to roll that for you later in the show.
Yeah.
They set it up just for us.
I know. They changed the lighting. They added in another chair, and he was so lovely, too.
He was great.
So I can't wait for everyone to see that. A big shout out to everyone who is watching live right now on YouTube, and if you're listening to this on iTunes later on, you can watch this show live. It will be live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. LA time, and I'm keeping an eye on the comments here. Hi to Ken Knapsack, who's watching live.
What's up, Pit Boss?
And I'll try to read some of the best ones as we go. But what is it about Tim Burton? I mean, he's a very distinct filmmaker, isn't he?
Very distinct. And here's a filmmaker who, for 30 years now, exactly 30 years, he made his directorial debut for a feature film with 1985's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And when you think about Tim Burton, you think about films that are dark,
gothic.
Kind of funny.
Fantasy.
Very moving. Yeah. Unexpectedly moving.
Really beautiful to look at. Very quirky.
And there's also like there's like a playfulness to them too.
Childlike.
And the lot of the protagonists are sort of social
outsiders.
Misfits.
Yeah.
Outcasts. But there's no one like him. There really isn't.
There really isn't. And that's why his films get described as Burton-esque.
Yes.
And no one can really do it like Burton. You know, he's had a career for over 30 years. He's made 17 movies. He's had some ups. He's had some downs. But his ups have been so strong. And that's why he's really good director to profile on our show.
Well, he's also a filmmaker who's worked with a lot of the same people over and over and over
again.
Johnny
Depp.
Obviously, Johnny Depp 8 times.
Danny Elfman
15 times.
Wow.
Colleen Atwood, costume designer, 10 times.
Yeah.
And when all these people are working at the top of their game, the result is brilliance, as mm-hmm. we'll find out on today's show.
So he had a wonderful life, you could
yes,
say.
Yes, he did.
That brings us to our segment called It's a Wonderful Life. Let's roll the video.
Hi, Ken.
Timothy Walter Burton was born on August 25th, 1958 in Burbank, California. His mother, Jean, owned a cat-themed gift shop, and his father, Bill, was a former minor league baseball player who later went on to work for the Burbank Parks and Recreation Department. Burton found solace from his reclusive childhood drawing cartoons and watching old movies. He studied character animation at the California Institute for the Arts, where his short film, Stalk of the Celery Monster, attracted the attention of Walt Disney's animation department. After graduating CalArts in 1979, he went to work for Disney full-time as an animator and a storyboard artist on feature films like The Fox and the Hound and The Black Cauldron. But Burton longed to direct his own projects, and after his 1984 live-action short Frankenweenie caught the attention of actor Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee-wee Herman, another CalArts alumni, Burton was selected by Rubens to make his feature directorial debut with 1985's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. The film was a hit, I know you are, but what am I, costing just $8 million to make and grossing more than $40 million at the box office. With his even more successful follow-up film, 1988's Beetlejuice, Burton solidified his reputation as a writer, producer, and director whose gothic, offbeat, and stylish films were also loads of fun, entertaining, and big-hearted. Tim Burton has 2 children and has been nominated for 2 Academy Awards, both of them for Best Animated Feature.
Poor Ken was sick while he was doing that, but he still did it for us.
Ken, you know, I know you are, but what am I? Very, very good, buddy boy.
And I just want to give a shout out to Matt Wright, who is watching for the first time from the UK live, first time live.
Very
he is
awesome.
A profiler. He's watching from London near the O2 Arena. Hey, Matt.
Oh, hey, Matt. What's up?
So cool.
Cheers, brother.
Yes. Well, firstly, let's get into our First Blood, the first Tim Burton movie that we saw.
What was yours?
Mine was Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I think I saw Beetlejuice. It was on VHS, not in cinema because I was young. I thought it was really scary when I first saw it. It's quite morbid when you think about it. Everybody dies. It's all about the afterlife and ghosts. So I think I was a little terrified of it. At the same time, I loved Michael Keaton. I just thought he was quite funny.
He's great.
He's dark but funny. And then I think it was Edward Scissorhands where I really realized who Tim Burton was.
Right.
But my first one was Beetlejuice. What about you?
Did you see Edward Scissorhands in the theater or was it on VHS?
I think that was on VHS too. I wasn't allowed to go to the theater very much when I was young, so I didn't see that one in theater. Yeah, I saw it on VHS and that really stuck with me.
Mine was Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Which I've never seen.
Okay, Alicia, you have to
see it. I don't think Pee-wee was very big in Australia. Maybe people can tell me if that's true or not.
Even if you don't like Pee-wee Herman or if you don't know anything about Pee-wee Herman, I mean, I didn't when I saw the movie, and I thought it was hilarious. I saw it 8 times in the theater that summer. It came
eight
out.
8 times?
8 times because I used to be able to do a mean Pee-wee Herman imitation.
Okay, do it.
Okay, this is the same exact pen I bought the night my bike was stolen. Why? What's the significance? I don't know.
All right, so
I know you are, but what am I?
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
But you know, the tequila dance, the 8th time I saw it, okay, when you see it, you will know what the tequila dance is.
All right, I will watch
But I got kicked out of the movie theater for doing the tequila dance. The payoff of this story is when I went to my 25-year high school reunion in 2011, people still called me Pee-wee.
Oh, that's so great.
I don't know if I like being called Pee-wee.
No, but you do it really well from the little I've seen of Pee-wee. You do it really well. Well, Pee-wee Herman didn't quite make our Fast Five, but let's see what did at Fast Five. Number five is...
We come in peace. We come in peace. We come in peace.
Mars Attacks. Or Agak Ak Agak Ak.
I know that people will say, why are you putting Mars Attacks in Fast Five? And what about all the other great movies
like
that he's done,
Fish.
Like Big Fish? Yeah, I know. And I do admit to liking Mars Attacks much better when I saw it the first time than rewatching it recently. But I think it is really important to have in our Fast Five because no one else could have made this movie but Tim Burton. Who else would be able to make a B sci-fi throwback to the 50s with an A-list cast?
With tongue planted firmly in cheek. It's
exactly.
A movie that does not take itself seriously, and it was a complete flip side to Independence Day.
That's
the
why I
smash
liked
hit,
it.
Right, the smash hit that came out 5 months before. But yeah, I'm with you. I thought this was a great tribute, a homage to the 50s cheesy sci-fi movies. It's based on the 1962 Topps trading card series, a 52-card set that was actually banned and taken out of production for a little while because the images of the Martians and the people dying was so graphic. For 1962, it was a big deal, so those cards became instant collector's items. Of course, Tim Burton had them.
Yeah.
This movie came out December 13th, 1996. It cost $80 million to make. Worldwide box office was just over $100 million. It was nominated for one MTV Movie Award.
Wow.
Best fight scene between Jim Brown and a Martian.
That is so funny. Well, I forgot when I was watching it again how many people are in the movie. Of course, I knew Sarah Jessica Parker, Jack Nicholson, Michael J. Fox, Pierce Brosnan, Annette Bening. But then you've got Glenn Close, Martin Short, even Jack Black and Christina Applegate in these small roles. It just shows you that people were really willing to do anything for Tim Burton. I mean, who else could get away with putting Sarah Jessica Parker's head on a chihuahua's body?
By the way, those scenes were a little disturbing, like when they beheaded Pierce Brosnan too. I mean,
and they kissed at the end and it's so romantic.
But that's Tim
Two
Burton.
Heads.
He really hit the nail on the head with what he was going for.
It was like an Ed Wood homage.
It was like if Ed Wood could have directed Mars Attacks,
yeah,
this is what it would have looked like.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Like when I watched it again, it was like not as good as I remembered it being, but I still liked it a lot. And let's find out what some of our profiler friends had to say about Mars Attacks. And well, what do you know?
Nothing.
No love for Mars Attacks.
No one likes Mars Attacks.
No one had anything to say about Mars Attacks. Were they saying anything live?
Yeah. No.
Not so much, right?
Ken Napsok says, Mars Attacks is one of Jack Black's best performances.
Way to go, Ken.
Gamer Jamie One says, the Mars Attacks cast is insane. So many great actors in that movie. And Rachel Cushing says, disturbing is what Burton does. It's true.
But also this movie, Sylvia Sidney, mm-hmm. who plays the grandmother, is hilarious.
Oh, she's funny.
And when she turns on Slim Whitman.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. And that's what kills the Martians.
And Tom Jones, too.
It was so damn funny.
Tom Jones, It's Not Unusual, which I realized appears in both Mars Attacks and in Edward Scissorhands when I was rewatching all the five.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah, he must be a big Tom Jones fan.
Definitely is a big Tom Jones fan. Well, okay, so no love for Mars Attacks.
Yeah, no love.
But when it comes to your favorite scene in a Tim Burton movie, what is your right stuff?
Well, I was almost going to go for the ice dance scene in Edward Scissorhands when he makes it snow. It spins around. It's so beautiful. But I decided to go with one that I really love, and that's from Ed Wood, which is my personal favorite of the Tim Burton movies. And it's the premiere scene, as you guys would say, for Bride of the Monster. Then it's when they arrive late and then they all walk into the cinema and everyone's going nuts. The usher says they're tearing the place apart in there. There's popcorn being thrown. It's a huge ruckus. Someone grabs Vampira's boobs.
All right.
And it's just so crazy. And it's one of these really surreal moments that, you know, didn't exactly happen in real life, but this was how it appeared through Edward's eyes. And then when they run out and then Patricia Arquette jumps on the taxi, they finally get a taxi. And then Martin Landau playing Bela Lugosi says, now that's a premiere. I like that.
I like it too. You know what? Ed Wood is also my personal favorite movie of Tim Burton's. Now, people are going to say, well, if it's your personal favorite, why isn't it your number one movie? No, I'm giving away the beans here.
Don't give it away.
But I think we should clarify that just because a movie is our personal favorite, it doesn't mean
it's the best.
It doesn't mean it's the best because there are other factors that go into it.
Yeah.
Obviously, box office, maybe reviews, and just maybe because it's more broad.
Mm.
You know, I think a movie like Ed Wood, because it didn't do so well, but people who love Hollywood and love movie making love it. But anyway, my favorite scene is also from Ed Wood, and it's really, really short.
Okay.
But can you guess which scene it is?
I was going to say in the haunted house.
Okay, that's a good scene.
I like that scene.
I love that scene, actually. But that's not my favorite. My favorite scene is when Ed Wood meets the man Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good scene.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Well, his voice was overdubbed.
Yeah, it's a different voice, right?
But he looked just like
him. He really did. And it's so fun to see the world's best director of the time with the world's worst director of the time, but they both share the same creative passion.
And also, just as an honorable mention for my favorite scene in a Tim Burton movie, at the end of Big Fish, when the son realizes his dad was telling the truth and everybody shows up for the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so moving and it's just such a great, it's a great payoff for a movie that's really about relationships and about fathers and sons.
Exactly.
But anyway.
Well, you could say that Tim Burton is definitely a director who loves the details.
Oh, he definitely is.
That's my segue.
That's your segue too?
For the last detail. Where we tell each other little known facts, things that you might know or you might not know.
Hit me up.
So, did you know that the casting of Michael Keaton as Batman was so controversial that fans wrote 50,000 letters to Warner Brothers to complain?
50,000. They didn't send emails? Oh, this was 1989.
This is a little, yeah,
before, a little before social media, before emails.
People were 50, outraged. 50,000
outraged. You think Ben Affleck can relate?
He got millions of tweets.
Millions of tweets. You think Ben Affleck called up Michael Keaton and was like,
dude,
how did you deal with this?
Michael Keaton says, I'm Batman.
Also from Batman, did you know that Robin Williams was originally offered, well, he wasn't originally offered the part of the Joker in the first Batman.
Yeah.
But he was offered the part of the Joker when Jack Nicholson got the cold feet. But the problem was that Warner Brothers used Robin Williams as bait to get Jack Nicholson to commit. So Robin Williams was so pissed off, as he should be, that when he was offered the part of the Riddler for Batman Forever a few years later, he turned it down, and he actually didn't make a movie for Warner Brothers for years until Warner Brothers apologized.
Wow. And also good that he wasn't in Batman Forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Batman Forever was okay. It was Batman and Robin that sucked.
No, Batman Forever was...
Oh, you didn't like that one either. Nah. Okay.
Here's another detail about Batman. The Batsuit involved 28 models, 25 capes, and 6 cowls. And the cowl was attached to the cape. So that's what led to the term the Bat-turn.
The Bat-turn!
Michael Keaton couldn't actually move his neck without moving his whole body. So it would be hard to save anyone when you're like that. Apparently that was the same with George Clooney. He laughs that they had to kind of wheel him out and he'd be like, I'm Batman, and then wheel him back and he couldn't do anything in that suit.
So when Christian Bale came time to play, when it came time for him to play Batman, he's I need to turn my head, man.
I know, otherwise it's like the dramatic chipmunk. It's like,
yeah, the dramatic turn, the dramatic back turn. Well, did you know who made her feature film debut in 2003's Big Fish? You'll never guess who it is. I couldn't believe it when I read it. I actually did some little research on it because I'm like, there's no way that this person made their debut in a Tim Burton film, Big Fish. Miley Cyrus.
What?
Miley Cyrus played Ruthie at age 8 in Big Fish.
Pre-twerking
Miley Cyrus. Oh my gosh, that word. I hate that word. All right, what else you got?
That's all I got, but I'm going to look at some little comments. People laughing about Batman Forever was terrible. Yeah, I think so too. And Batman Returns, not sure about the execution.
Yeah,
in
Batman Returns wasn't
says
great.
Matt Wright. Yeah. Let's keep going then.
Let's keep going then. Wait, one more bit of trivia.
Because I don't have any others.
One more bit of trivia for you, my friend. So in Mars Attacks, Warren Beatty was supposed to play the president. When he got cold feet, Paul Newman was cast.
Ah.
But then he didn't take it, so Jack Nicholson took it.
And then Jack did two roles.
And he played two roles. Also cast, originally considered for the part of the First Lady before Glenn Close, Meryl Streep and Diane Keaton.
Wow.
There you go, Miss Malone.
There you go. I did not know that. But let's keep going with our
Fast Five.
Number four
is...
I'm Batman.
Of course.
I'm Batman.
1989, June 23rd. Movie is a little more than 25 years old. I got to tell you, this holds up great. It holds up so great that if you look at the modern superhero movies today, Batman could have come out today and it would fit right at home. It doesn't look dated like the Superman movies.
No, it doesn't. I think this was a film that really reinvented the superhero movie, because before this there was Superman, which was all very optimistic and very much of its time.
Very much.
You rewatch Superman now, you can definitely tell it was made back then. But Batman, it's got this really dark tone to it, and true to Burton's form, he focused more on Batman and Bruce Wayne being the outsider, the outcast, rather than the typical hero. And actually, Tim Burton says about the casting of Michael Keaton, because he was known as a comedic actor and that's why people were upset about the casting, but he says he doesn't look like a superhero, and that was the point. He looks like a guy who would need to dress up like a bat for effect. I definitely agree with that.
And Tim Burton actually referred to this movie as the complete duel of the freaks. And Burton himself was inspired by seminal Batman comics like The Killing Joke and The Dark Knight Returns.
And it looks like the production design is beautiful. There's so much detail
to it. It's beautiful, gorgeous, dark.
It doesn't look like it's set in the real world. It definitely looks like a comic book.
And maybe just because I just watched Blade Runner recently for the 50,000th time, it does have a little bit of that look as well. Gotham City looked a little bit like LA in 2019.
It's less rain.
Without all the rain. All right, come on, we're back. Same person. But this was the highest grossing movie of 1989. It made $251 million domestically, $411 million worldwide. It won one Academy Award, the only award it was nominated for, Best Art and Set Direction. Mm-hmm. It was nominated for a Golden Globe, Best Actor in a Musical Comedy, Jack Nicholson. Love that Joker.
Oh, he's so great. He's so over the top. It's definitely a lot campier than the Christopher Nolan movies.
Oh, you kidding? But you know, that's actually the brilliance of Nolan's Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Because Heath Ledger as the Joker was completely different from Jack Nicholson.
You had to be different Nicholson was so iconic. Well, before Tim Burton came on, he was just 29 years old, by the way, when he directed this movie.
Tim Burton?
Tim Burton was 29.
No way. I didn't
so crazy.
That.
But before he came on board, they were considering Joe Dante, who did Gremlins, and Ivan Reitman from Ghostbusters. They were both attached, but then they left. The only thing I think that really dates this movie is the Prince song.
The songs, yeah.
The Prince soundtrack.
The soundtrack, the score by Danny Elfman is great, but the soundtrack by Prince. Yeah, I agree. One thing I want to say is in terms of Tim Burton's blockbusters, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously a movie like Alice in Wonderland is his most successful. That made more than $1 billion worldwide.
Commercially successful, yeah.
Commercially successful. But I think in terms of fully realized blockbusters, Batman is the one. It's not his best film overall.
No.
But in terms of the big studio blockbuster type movies,
yeah,
it is the most fully realized and his best.
It was him coming on board with a studio film and making it his own. My question to you, Mr. Matt,
yes,
is
Ms. Malone,
a question that was posed in Neighbours with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron. Who is your Batman?
Who is
and,
my
and
Batman?
Maybe who is your Batman and who is your Bruce Wayne? Are you Christian Bale Batman? Are you Michael Keaton Batman?
Well, I would say that, you know, I've given that a lot of thought. I've given that a lot of thought.
It's important stuff.
Important stuff. And by the way, that was a question I was going to ask you as well.
Oh.
Right at the top of my list here.
Of course.
I would say that my Batman is Nolan's, but my Bruce Wayne is Burton's.
Same as me.
Yes.
Because
why?
Okay, well, Christian Bale, I think he definitely embodies that Batman, that hero. I can imagine him saving lives more than I can Michael Keaton. But Michael Keaton plays the outcast really well. And I like the way that was focused here about Bruce Wayne just being this weird guy in a mansion, because you have to be pretty weird to do all this stuff. I love, of course, Nolan's Bruce Wayne, how he grounded him in reality. But to me, I grew up watching Michael Keaton. So that's why I think of him as Bruce Wayne. But I never quite bought him as the Batman flying around.
Okay, follow-up question for you then.
Uh-oh.
Who is your Joker? Is it Jack Nicholson or is it Heath Ledger?
That's so hard, isn't
That's
it?
A hard one, yeah. They're
I would
both
have to
great.
Say it's Heath Ledger now.
Why?
Because he was so terrifying and so realistic.
He was told exactly how I feel. And because the Batman movie from 1989... it felt like a comic book movie, and the Joker got his powers, so to speak, by falling into the acid and with a smile. Love that Joker.
Yeah.
But the thing about The Dark Knight from 2008 is that neither Batman nor the Joker had superpowers. They were they were both sociopaths. The only difference is that Batman was on our side.
Yeah.
But you saw more, I think, in The Dark Knight that Batman and the Joker really needed each other.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're digressing. We're getting off topic.
Maybe people can weigh in and tell us who they think is their Batman, their personal Batman, and their personal Bruce Wayne.
But the interesting thing to note about Jack Nicholson is not only did he get a percentage of the box office, he also got a percentage of the merchandise sales.
Wow.
And Batman created more than $750 million in merchandise sales just from the movie that summer.
So we have Burton to thank everything that comes after it.
But everything that's come after that, and the only other movie I'd seen that had created such a merchandising bonanza was Star Wars. Yeah, mm-hmm. And maybe Planet of the Apes from the 70s, which is before your time, but not mine.
Well, let's see what Schmoville and our profilers have to say about Batman. Seb Lacey. Hi, Seb.
Hi, Seb.
Says, Tim Burton's Batman is one of my favorite films. I remember watching it at the drive-in as a kid. How cool would that be?
That'd be awesome.
There are so many great things about this movie. The dark atmosphere, Danny Elfman's gothic score, Jack Nicholson's over-the-top Joker, and the inspired casting of Michael Keaton as Batman. Burton really did set the standard for comic book movies, which is still being felt today in today's comic book movies. On a personal side note, this movie is the one that ignited my passion for comics and movies. How cool.
How cool, Seb. Well, Danny Birdsall says, Tim Burton's Batman dip with no other superhero movie had ever done or has done since. Interesting. It proved it's possible to be both dark and mature, but also have an over-the-top nature. The music score by Danny Elfman is a masterpiece and is the best Batman score ever made. Michael Keaton is perfect as Batman. People may have complained about the casting at first, but that's what makes him so perfect because, Alicia Malone, you should never suspect that Bruce Wayne could ever be Batman. Well said, Danny.
Well said, right, Danny. Well, Rachel Cushing has weighed in on the YouTube live chat. She says, I actually like Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. He had the duality down a little better, the playboy outcast. And then several people saying that that Mark Hamill is their Joker.
Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah, Mark Hamill.
He did the voice, right, in one of them. And Joseph Heisenberg, I lost your thing, said that Ledger said if Burton was directing, he wouldn't be the Joker because he loved Nicholson so much.
Well, the other thing about Ledger is just how he just got so in character. I mean, just watching that movie, I mean, you're right. His Joker was scary. Mm. I was scared of him. But anyway.
Anyway.
There you go.
Now let's move on to our big picture segment. That's when we talk about our favorite posters. Tim Burton is a very visual director, and that includes
his
posters.
One sheets, yes.
So let's take a look at the big picture.
Hey, Ken.
The one sheet for Tim Burton's latest movie, Big Eyes, is also one of his best. And if you'll pardon the expression, it paints an accurate depiction of its story. Artist Margaret Keane, played by Amy Adams, holds up a picture of one of her famous paintings. But it's Walter Keane, played with scene-chewing gusto by Christoph Waltz, who holds the cards here. Just like he controlled Margaret's life for more than a decade. But back to 1988 for Beetlejuice, the film, and the one sheet that represented Burton, and some might say Michael Keaton, at the top of his manic, twisted, fun, macabre game. We hear a sequel is in the works. Maybe if you say his name three times, he'll make it. Burton, Burton, Burton. And then there's 1993's The Nightmare Before Christmas, produced by Burton and directed by Henry Selick. Dark, stylish, imaginative, heartfelt, and with beautiful music, became an instant classic for not just one holiday, but two, Halloween and Christmas.
Yay, Ken!
Way to go. Thanks for, like, you know, batting it in and hitting a home run when you weren't feeling well, buddy boy.
I know. And he said, oh, Batman was the event movie of that summer. The anticipation sitting in the theater was palpable.
Totally.
I can imagine. And Joseph Heisman says, Alicia says my YouTube name. Yay!
Hooray!
There you go. Hi. Hi, everyone watching live.
Hi, everyone watching live. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday at 3 p.m. LA time, Pacific time. And we interrupt this profiles to bring an important message. Please, very, very important to do a few things for us. A, go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance. Like our Facebook page, because not only do we love when you like our Facebook page, but you get to join in all the fun with taking part in our brackets.
So much fun.
It's so much fun. And chiming in on what movies you love and why. As you can see, we read your comments on the air.
Yeah.
Also, please go to iTunes. Rate and review us on iTunes. Very, very important. These ratings and reviews are what keep Profiles alive, what keep all the Schmoes shows alive.
Yes.
Like Jedi Alliance and Meet the Movie Press, but make sure you rate and review Profiles.
Exactly.
And also go to YouTube.
Yeah, subscribe to youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork, and that's when you can find all the shows there, and including our live stream every week.
Every week.
If you want to be a part of all this action, make sure you go there and subscribe.
Now that brings us to
quiz show, which I'm not good at.
Time for us to test each other's knowledge of trivial moments of Tim Burton films.
Okay.
All right. You want to go first?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Who did Tim Burton initially want to cast as Beetlejuice? I think you know this one, but just humor me.
Okay.
A, Tom Jones.
Tom Jones, okay.
B,
Tom Jones could be a good Beetlejuice.
Sammy Davis Jr. Ooh, interesting choice. Or C, Michael Jackson. What?
Well, those are very diverse choices.
I know.
Who among those three did Tim Burton originally want to cast as Beetlejuice? I'll tell you, it wasn't Michael Jackson. Tom Jones, maybe?
It.
Okay, was it Sammy Davis Jr.?
Yes!
The Candyman can!
I know you know
yes,
that one.
Yes, hooray!
Thanks for doing that.
Thanks
with
for
me.
Playing along, Alicia Malone. Well, this one's a little harder.
Okay.
In Mars Attacks.
Yes.
What was the name of Grandma's dead cat?
Oh, I have no idea.
Was it Fluffy? Was it Muffy? Was it Whiskers? Or was it Toonces?
I'm going to say again.
Fluffy, Muffy, Whiskers, Toonces.
I would say Fluffy.
It's Muffy.
Oh, Muffy, babe.
But Toonces is the name of my dead cat, so there you go.
I'm doing the Steve Martin King Tut dance for anyone who knows that.
That's impressive that you know that. That's also before your time.
All right, let's keep going with our Fast Five.
Coming
at number
three is...
Wait for it.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah!
Showtime.
Beetlejuice. We love Beetlejuice. Released March 30th, 1988. Won one Oscar. The only one it was nominated for. Best makeup. Of course, it had to be best makeup. Cost $15 million to make. Box office $73 million domestic, which in 1988 was a lot of money. Showtime, indeed. I feel like Beetlejuice is Tim Burton hitting his stride.
Mm.
All of the signature moments. We talked about Beetlejuice a little bit before, but you know, the scary aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
the quirky, the playfulness.
It's moving. The gothic horror overtone set in suburbia.
It's funny. And Alec Baldwin is really thin.
He is. I love seeing Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis together. Of course, they die straight away. It's very morbid. But it is quite funny, too. And I definitely appreciated it watching it again just last week. I realized how special it is and how it's a film that would not get made today because it's so insane.
It really is insane. I mean, just the scene in the waiting room. I love the scene that the little guy, the guy with the little shrunken head. And just like, you know, it's like, look at him. And you're like, I just remember when I was watching that movie for the first time, I was laughing my ass off at the little hunter with the shrunken head.
Hey, Michael Keaton is so brilliant in that role. He's trapped, but at the same time, he's free as a character because he's so horrible. He can do whatever he likes, and people expect that of him. And he's so iconic, isn't he, with the stripy suit.
Well, this was a movie that was supposed to be much, much darker. But it obviously lightened up in all the right ways. Michael Keaton is only in 17 and a half minutes out of the 92-minute running time.
Wow.
And he only filmed for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yet, to this day, it is one of his favorite roles, probably not including Birdman, which is an amazing role.
And one of his most iconic roles,
definitely,
too.
Sure, yeah.
Winona Ryder, also, she was so sweet, she was so young, and she kind of plays the outcast in this movie. It's very much about parents and kids. I also like what it said about art and critics and people criticizing art, repression. I think that's quite personal for Burton, who grew up, I think, feeling like he was a bit of an outcast and feeling like throughout his career that he's been criticized for his art.
Well, to be criticized by Pauline Kael, who is one of the most influential film critics of all time, to get the seal of approval from Pauline Kael, who referred to Beetlejuice as a comedy classic, that must have felt really, really good. But I'll tell you, every time I hear Deo, I think of Beetlejuice.
Deo.
And when the actor Glenn Shadix, who played Otto,
when
he passed away in 2010, the last song that they played at his funeral was Deo.
Oh, wow.
So hopefully he has a sense of humor in the afterlife.
But still come and haunt them in some sheets going, ooh.
A lot of great it's so funny.
So funny. I love the puppet monsters as well. The special effects are really great. The production design, very much Tim Burton.
Very Tim Burton.
Everything about it, it's really a gem of a movie. And it's one that, you know, we grew up watching. So you kind of, you forget about and then you rewatch it when you're older and then you realize just how special it was.
And you realize how great it is too, and how it holds
how
up.
Well made.
And like you said, how it would not have been made today.
Mm-hmm.
But Thalor Mendoza, hello Thalor. Of all the weird and bizarre, Beetlejuice has to be my favorite. Tim Burton made a film about two people going through death and the afterlife. Really enjoyable and funny. Fantastic performance by Gina Davis, Alec Baldwin, and of course Michael Keaton. The creativity, the practical effects, and the amazing humor make something awful as death be fun. Thanks, guys, and don't say Beetlejuice too much.
The people on the live stream are trying to guess who we have as number one and number two now. If Beetlejuice is number three, they're like, is it Big Fish? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Ed Wood? Is it going to be Sweeney Todd or Planet of the Apes?
It's not going to be Planet of the Apes. That we can tell you.
Mark Tordai. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
He says, although it was Ron Howard's Night Shift that gave Michael Keaton his big break, it wasn't until a few years later with Beetlejuice that audiences really saw what kind of range Keaton had as an actor.
True.
Tim Burton created a dark, haunting, and highly irreverent world. He was also able to give Winona Ryder one of her early breakout roles. From the comic book style, horror-esque production design to the small moments of stop-motion animation, Beetlejuice is a unique and risky film.
It is a risky film. It was very risky at the time, and it's still, you watch it now, and you just go, how did they get away with that? But audiences got it because it made so much money, and now there's talks of a sequel.
Yeah, would you like to see that? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, part of me does, part of me doesn't.
What if it's not good?
If it's not good, then, well, we'll always have Paris. Shame.
But we're going to be talking about Beetlejuice with our player segment, where
which
we talk
right
about
now.
Our favorite characters. So what did you love about the character of Beetlejuice?
He was just wacky. He just said whatever was on his mind. Anything goes. I mean, when Michael Keaton came on the screen, not that I wasn't enjoying the film before that point, but it just came to life.
Yeah.
Like, he just grabbed, just like his character, he grabbed the role by the balls.
Yeah, he did. And I think when you're a kid watching this movie, you wish you could say the kind of stuff that Beetlejuice does.
And a lot of the things that he did was totally improvised and off the cuff. But who else do you got?
Well, we talked about the Joker already.
Joker,
Jack
yes.
Nicholson's Joker. So iconic. It was unlike any movie villain I think I'd seen, or any comic book movie villain, that's for sure. So creepy, but also really funny. And as we were saying, very campy when you look back.
Well,
it
what
works.
About, well, now you have to go back and you have to watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
Trust me, if you love Tim Burton, you will love this movie.
And why do you love Pee-wee? Why did you love him when you were young?
I could imitate him. I had really short hair for a little bit when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I wore like a little you know, suit. I dressed up as Pee-wee Herman for Halloween one time. But Pee-wee was a sweet guy. He just wanted to find his bike, which he was told was in the basement at the Alamo. Just watch the movie.
Okay.
It'll all make sense.
I will watch it. I love Ed Wood as well, for a similar reason that you like Pee-wee Herman. He's such a nice guy as portrayed in the movie. Very optimistic. He's very passionate about his movies, and he'll do anything to get a movie made. And I think that takes a lot in Hollywood. So you watch him, played by Johnny Depp, and you really root for him.
Well, you also root for Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas, a movie that Burton produced but did not direct. Just a little Jack Skellington and a little bit of Edward Scissorhands.
Nice.
Two great Burton characters there. But this was a character. It was a great movie. It was an instant classic, not just for Halloween, but for Christmas as well. And it was just a beautiful love story. And the music was fantastic. And it's just watching the stop-motion animation directed by Henry Selick.
Yeah.
It's just a lovely, wonderful film.
That's a movie that I forget Tim Burton didn't direct himself.
It feels like he directed it, doesn't it?
It feels exactly like he directed
especially
it.
When you watch Corpse Bride.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of like a sequel of sorts.
Yeah.
And then Frank and Weenie because of the stop motion.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, Nightmare Before Christmas is an absolute classic.
Well, over on our Profiles with Malone and Mance Facebook page, they've been having these great brackets.
Yes.
So this week they did favorite Tim Burton film. It got down to final four, which was Beetlejuice versus Ed Wood and Batman versus Edward Scissorhands. Came down to the final two of Batman versus Beetlejuice. Can you guess who won?
Let's say Batman.
Batman!
Batman won. Well, it's Michael Keaton versus Michael Keaton.
I know.
So he won either way.
Damn. But yeah, Batman is the favorite film according to our profiles. And again, just go to our Facebook page if you want to take part in all that.
Go to our Facebook page anyway. It's Profiles with Malone and Mance. Go there, like it, join in on the fun.
I think Scott Mance could sell anything. You could sell snow to Eskimo.
Here's what you got to do. Okay, right now on our Facebook page, I think we're like 1,966 likes.
Oh,
by the end of this broadcast, I challenge all the profilers watching live
to get to 2,000.
Bring us to 2,000. Bring us over 2,000 profilers. Share our Facebook page with all of your Facebook friends. Tell them, boy, you don't know what you're missing. This is the best podcast ever about movies, and it is.
Exactly.
We love doing it. We just want to keep doing this every week, so please like our page. Subscribe to Profiles on iTunes and subscribe to us on YouTube.
And I'm enjoying reading all the live comments as we do this stream. Joseph Heisenberg, don't worry, I don't think you actually like Planet of the Apes. So you're off the hook there.
Oh, boy.
Matthew Adams says, Ed Wood is the best character. He was a cross-dressing imperfectionist and he was a real guy. And Robbie Reed says, Ed Wood is my favorite character. So innocent and so funny. And that segues nicely to our Fast Five
number two, which is...
I like to dress in women's clothing.
Ed Wood!
Released September 30th, 1994. This is Tim Burton's first R-rated movie.
And also his lowest grossing film and his first commercial failure. I'm sure a lot of people will say, why are you putting this at number two? There's several reasons. This is my personal favorite.
Mine too.
Ed Wood, yeah, yep. Because... it has a lot to say about Hollywood. I love how it talks about the delusion that is needed to get a film made. I love that it focuses on this Hollywood outsider, this outcast, this cross-dressing, schlocky, hacky film director, but he never lets go of his dream.
He's infectious.
He's nice about it too. He's ambitious, but he tries to do good things. He tries to do good things by Bela Lugosi. It's an interesting story, and even though the biopic is not 100% factual, as we said before, it's very surreal and it's optimistic. It's seen more through Ed Wood's eyes rather than what actually happened. It is so uplifting to watch, isn't it?
It really is uplifting. In fact, it's so uplifting that even though he is a horrible filmmaker, he believes in himself so much that you believe in him too.
Yeah, and also takes a look at the 50s in Hollywood, which
it's
is
so
my
great.
Favorite era. Yeah. I romanticize that era so much. So any movie that talks about the 50s, I'm in. Or any movie from the 50s, really.
It's a movie that is one of the best movies ever made about Hollywood. Like you said, it was the lowest grossing movie of his career. $5.9 million is all it made. It cost $18 million to make, so it basically cost more to make than all of Edward D. Wood Jr.'s films combined.
Oh, wow.
What I love about it, too, like you said, it's so idealistic and optimistic. Tim Burton does not judge he does not judge Ed Wood.
No, and I think he feels an affinity with him, not that Tim Burton is a terrible director by any means, but I think he appreciates how Ed Wood was really focused on getting his vision across and didn't want to bend to producers and everyone else who has to have their say. And also that he had a unique vision, that he was trying to do different things.
He had a unique vision, no question about it.
Different things from everyone else. And can you imagine trying to pitch this movie, Ed Wood, to the studios? Like, I want to make a biopic about the worst director ever. Oh, and in black and white.
Wow.
Even with a great cast.
It's a miracle it got made.
I know.
But when you look at... back in the early 90s and the late 80s, Tim Burton was at the top of his game. Mm. He really hit his stride.
Powerful.
He was powerful. He had Beetlejuice. He had Batman. He had Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
So, and then Batman Returns, which wasn't as good, but it still did make a lot of money. It was a successful film. And he was going to direct the third Batman, but he just produced it. But Ed Wood was his passion project. Mm-hmm. It was his labor of love, and that love shows. And the interesting thing about Ed Wood is out of all the 17 movies that he directed, 15 of them were scored by Danny Elfman. This was not one of them.
Yeah.
The score for this movie was by Howard Shore. And it's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect score. But it does feel like a Danny Elfman score, regardless of that. Mm. And it was written by screenwriters Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, who just worked with Tim Burton again recently on his latest movie, Big Eyes.
Yeah.
And Big Eyes, I felt, while I liked it a lot, I felt like it was probably his best movie since Big Fish, or even Ed Wood.
Yeah. I love Johnny Depp in this movie as well, because people talk about now he goes a little over the top with all the disguises. He always has to have something on his face. And here he had the fake teeth.
Yeah.
But he brought such humanity to this character. He made him so realistic. And then you have Bill Murray as Bunny, and I love Sarah Jessica Parker as well. It's also probably the most adult film, or adult, as you guys say, of Tim Burton's, because it deals with sexuality.
Definitely.
And cross-dressing.
And it won 2 Oscars, Best Makeup and Best Supporting Actor for Martin Landau.
He's so good as Bela Lugosi.
So good, Bela Lugosi. Watching this movie again, I was absolutely floored by how great Martin Landau was in this film. You know, I remembered liking him and being like, wow, he was really great in this film. But the perspective, I mean, this movie came out more than 20 years ago. I hadn't seen it in many, many years.
Mm.
And just, I've been reviewing movies a lot. I've watched movies differently. Mm-hmm. And rewatching all the films that we do as our research, which is the best part about doing profiles.
So fun.
Second best part about doing profiles is watching the movies. The first part is this.
Oh,
right here.
So sweet.
Talking to Alicia Milano about movies. But just watching him again, especially that harrowing scene when he's going through the detox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're really...
The screams in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Oof. Oh, but it's such a moving relationship between Edward and Bella.
Yeah, I love that Edward really believes in Bella and wants to give him his comeback, even though he's a little misguided with the films he makes. But I like that Bella trusts him too.
Right. Well, it did give him sort of a comeback of sorts.
Now, our fave, Liam LeGrand, he wrote in about Edward. He said, Edward is my favorite Tim Burton film because as someone who loves and adores movies, I love the behind-the-scenes look at both filmmaking and classic Hollywood in general. Johnny Depp gives one of his best performances for it's both funny and sometimes touching. Oh, sorry, this is Tyler Myers. Sorry, I just skipped ahead. And we're both funny and sometimes touching to see him continue on his career despite the negative reviews. Martin Landau is also brilliant as Bela Lugosi, for he and Depp work off each other flawlessly. One of the best movies about making movies ever made. Myers.
Tyler Myers.
You're so good.
We agree, Tyler Myers. Definitely one of the best movies ever made.
Comments all the time.
And as a fan
this
of...
This one's from Liam.
This one. Liam LeGrand, who is a great profiler and just a very cool Beatles fan. Yeah. Say that every week, don't I?
Yeah.
As a fan of classic Hollywood, it was interesting to see the filmmaking experience through the perspective of the worst director of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Depp gives the best performance of his career, providing commentary and drama when required to this diverse and layered character. The rest of the supporting performances are also fantastic. However, two that stand out for me, Martin Landau as Bela Lugosi, Vincent D'Onofrio as Orson Welles. They both perfectly capture the icon's personalities and characteristics. It's definitely my favorite film about making films behind Sunset Boulevard. Way to go, Liam.
I love movies that talk about making films
as
well.
Oh, so great.
As a film fan, a film geek.
A film geek.
You love all that stuff. Now is our segment, The Others, where we're going to talk about some other movies which didn't quite make our Fast Five. One, of course, is Big Fish.
Big Fish. Now, Big Fish is a fairy tale. And it's a moving fairy tale about a father who likes to tell lots of stories, the son who doesn't believe him. I mean, Albert Finney was so great in this movie. Jessica Lange as his wife.
It's so magical.
And the scene that really sticks out for me, and this could have easily been my right stuff too, in addition to the end of the film, is, you know, Albert Finney's character is dying. And he's in a bathtub and he's like underwater, and Jessica Lange goes in. She's like, "What are you doing?" He says, "I was drying out." And she gets in the bathtub with him and hugs him because she realizes that she doesn't have a lot of time left with him.
Aww.
It's such a poignant moment.
That made me cry.
But it's a really moving film. And actually, I've reviewed Big Fish when it came out in 2003. I said it would take an expert storyteller to make a movie about an expert storyteller. As a result, the film is vintage Burton, filled to the rim with offbeat characters, quirky humor, magical whimsy. Even though it can be uneven at times with a tear-jerking climax that lays it on pretty thick, it still walks the fine line between being an enchanting fairy tale and a contemporary drama about family, estrangement, and reconciliation. Who the hell wrote this?
Some guy.
The
thing that
no
I like
I
about
that.
You, Mance, is that you always stand by your reviews, even years later.
Years later, yes.
You have the opinion. And
I have an
stick
opinion.
To
I
it.
Stick to it.
I like it.
Thanks,
I like
Leash.
It a lot.
Appreciate it.
Well, Nicholas Maglieri, hopefully I said that right, also likes Big Fish. Said Big Fish, like many of Tim Burton's other films, transcends a single genre. And while it could generally be considered a fantasy film, it has elements from other genres, including horror, crime, comedy, and tragedy. It is an emotional roller coaster. I love that. With amazing, larger than life characters. The ending of this movie is one of the most heartfelt endings in any movie. Everybody should watch it if they haven't seen it.
Well, James Ryan says this about Sweeney Todd.
Ah, Sweeney Todd.
There are so many great Tim Burton pictures, but my favorite would have to be Sweeney Todd. It's one of the more forgotten pictures. I think it stands head to head with movies like Ed Wood, Beetlejuice, and Batman. Sweeney Todd was a film that was such a dark change of pace for the director. Yes, it has his signature look and his usual dark tone, but for Burton to handle a musical so effectively is one of the major achievements of his career. Knowing so little about Sweeney Todd before seeing it gave me one of my favorite theater experiences of all time. Mm. When the credits rolled, I sat in shock after having witnessed one of the most powerful film endings I've ever seen.
That's great. I love hearing all these comments of films that we might not necessarily think about or might not get to include in our Fast Five.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean that they're terrible films, and it doesn't mean that someone out there doesn't love them as their Fast Five, their personal Fast Five.
Look at our friend Steve Zissou.
Yep.
Justin Bass, he says, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was my first blood. Mine too. I watched it in the theater. Me too. All I wanted after watching the film was a pack of Trick Ink gum.
I will watch it. Okay. I don't know.
I know you are, but what am I? If I had a dollar for every time I did the Pee-wee Herman tequila dance, oh my God, Steve, I did too. I would be a rich man. The first time I watched it as an adult, I laughed my butt off. It is a timeless film with heart and humor. Would you like a stick of gum, Alicia or Scott? Just see the movie.
I will see it. Now, Hector Mendoza on the live chat says, I've become a Profiles cult follower, first time joining the live show.
Yes, way to go.
Thank you so much for joining. Now we have to talk about the latest film by Tim Burton as one of our others.
From Big Fish to Big Eyes.
This is a true story about Walter and Margaret Keane, an artist couple. Well, Walter claimed he was the artist. Margaret Keane was actually the one doing those crazy Big Eyes paintings, which went everywhere. They were super popular, but Walter claimed ownership.
Here's the thing about Big Eyes. I like Big Eyes a lot, and I really do feel like it's his strongest and most resonant film since Big Fish, or even Ed Wood. The dynamic between Walter and Margaret, mm-hmm. Why she stayed in the situation for so long. And again, screenwriters Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander, who did Ed Wood, they're obviously very adept at building character. Mm. But the style of the movie, while the cinematography was great and the colors, it didn't feel like a typical Tim Burton film.
It didn't.
That's what I liked about it.
There's the opening shot, which it opens, it's not giving anything away, but opens in suburbia. And that was like, that is Burton. Then the rest of it, yeah, doesn't feel like Burton. But I think he wanted to do something different and wanted to do something with a lower budget. And he said that he wanted to do a film that, you know, maybe McDonald's and KFC and all these other big brands wouldn't chime in to have merchandise too. Just something that's all about the story.
And just that's a great say to our moment of truth on this episode of Profiles.
Yeah, well, we got to sit down with the man himself, Tim Burton, to talk all about Big Eyes and also about his career. So here is the conversation.
Tim Burton, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about Profiles. Our profile this week is a celebration of your career.
Oh, wow. Why, if I died or something?
Well, I know that originally Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander wanted to direct Big Eyes. Yeah. So how did you come to direct it?
I stole it from them. No, I mean, you know, obviously I'd worked with Scott and Larry many years ago on Ed Wood, and so I knew their work very well, knew them very well. And it was interesting because I didn't know that they were writing a script on this story. And I, you know, had my own interest growing up with the artwork, surrounded by it in Burbank. And so I had that connection. And then many years later, about mid-1990s, a friend of mine told me the story about Keane's. And, you know, I, like everybody else, thought Walter was the artist and got really interested in it. Then met her, went to San Francisco and commissioned a painting from her and met her. And then a couple of years later, I learned that Scott and Larry had written a script based on it. So I knew right away it was right. It's right up their street. They excel at this kind of thing. So,
well, after doing sort of larger scale productions like Alice in Wonderland, like Dark Shadows, how great was it? How liberating was it for you as an artist to scale back and just focus on character like you did with Big Fish and Ed Wood?
Yeah, well, it was great. You know, it was low budget, but it was fun. Smaller crew. I mean, luckily I had great actors. I mean, every actor that I worked with was somebody I had never worked with but admired, and so I was very, very lucky to work and meet new people and give it a different energy, you know, and you know, moving around quickly, trying to make Vancouver look like San Francisco, things like that. You know, it was quite challenging, but very much fun. And again, I had my own personal connection to the story, so it meant a lot to me.
Yeah, did it feel like a personal story for you? Because you mentioned you grew up with this artwork.
Yeah, yeah, and also I understand that sort of dynamic, you know, the question of what's good and what's bad or what's art or what's not, and you know, because I've experienced that myself in terms of people's the polarization of opinion. I mean, I remember, you know, as a child, you know, people either loved the Keane's work or hated it. You know, I mean, there was no in between in terms of the response to it. So that's something that I could relate to, and also just the Margaret's character, her shyness, her not being able to communicate, you know, only through her work, and all was something I could relate to, and you know, Walter's sort of manic depressive mood swings, and I could so I understood all the characters, you know.
Well, the movie sort of does take you back, especially because of Scott and Larry. How did this sort of compare to making Ed Wood, which is also based on a real-life character?
Yeah, well, they're good at finding these sort of truth or stranger than fiction characters, you know, real stories. And also, both the similarity between Ed Wood and Keane is in the sense that you know, obviously they're people sort of outside the mainstream of society on one level. Mm-hmm. Their work is, you know, decisively, you know, people are very opinionated about whether things are good or bad. And, you know, so they know how to really mine these characters.
And this year is actually the 25th anniversary of Batman. Mm. So I'm wondering if you could share some of your favorite memories from making that.
Well, I just remember being ill the whole time.
Really?
But it felt new at the time, which felt exciting, you know. I mean, it was, even though it was sort of, you know, sometimes criticized for being too dark or whatever, it just felt exciting and new at the time, you know, you know, working with Michael, who had worked with on Beetlejuice, and then him doing sort of the opposite kind of thing, the restrained, you know, being Batman, and obviously Jack Nicholson, and it was such a great help, you know, supporter of me at that time, because I hadn't really done a big movie. So I was very, very, felt very lucky and excited to be doing it at that time.
Mm-hmm. And last question, you know, bringing it back to Big Eyes, how great working with Golden Globe nominees Amy Adams and Christoph Waltz on this film?
No, I mean, they're both, you know, the characters are obviously so different, and yet they work together so well. And like I said, for me, this was a, you know, since I'm not really a social person, it was a great way to meet people, you know, that I admire and want to work with, you know. And so, you know, the whole cast was that way. Each and every one of them was somebody that I'd seen and admired them as people or their work. And again, that just made it a real special experience.
Well, this was a really special experience. Thank you so much for joining us
great.
On Profiles.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Yay! Yes! All right!
We were so excited to talk to him, and he was so nice.
He was so nice. He was a lot livelier than I expected him to be.
Yeah, really animated.
Very
really
animated.
Fun,
like
really
his
funny.
Movies.
Yeah. And I love that Rachel Cushing just said, it's amazing that these directors are excited about this show, and it's nice to let them know how much we love their films. And we definitely do that. We pass that on when we talk to them. And it's amazing how many directors want to talk to us about
the show. Yeah, like Quentin Tarantino wanted to talk to us, but he was filming on location.
Yeah, comments about that. He couldn't, but he said, like, best wishes. Like, it blows my mind.
And when I was trying to find a guest for the Ridley Scott show, mm-hmm. I reached out to Harris Ford, and his publicist was like, he was going to do it. But I had also reached out to Ridley Scott, and Ridley Scott said yes. So Harrison Ford was checked in with Ridley Scott. It's like, well, it's your show. You do it. So Harrison Ford said, no, you do it, Ridley Scott.
That blows my mind. So Harrison Ford said yes.
He said yes.
And he just wanted to check with Ridley Scott to make sure that Ridley was okay with him talking about Blade Runner.
Right.
And then he called up Ridley, and Ridley said, oh, I'm doing that show.
Yep.
And Harrison was like, oh, sorry.
That's
I didn't realize.
Yep.
You go ahead. And
that's
we're like,
why we
wanted
Ridley
both
Scott.
Of you. But still, that is cool.
That
the
is still cool,
is
yes.
Getting out
the
about
word's getting
profiles.
Out about Profiles. So make sure you get the word out, too. Go to our Facebook page, Profiles of Malone and Mance. Give it a like. Share it. Bring us over 2,000. Go to our Facebook page. Like it. Let's get over 2,000 profilers.
Yes.
Make sure you subscribe to iTunes.
See what it's up to now.
See what it's up to while we are on the line.
line, and because we love doing this, you know, Alicia and I have very, very busy day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
This is our labor of love.
1971 likes at the moment.
Okay, almost there. Less than 20. We're 29 away. But this is something that we love to do. We make the time for it. And we put a lot into this, our hearts, our souls, because we love movies. And we
many
love,
hours.
You know, but it's something we just love to do.
It's so much fun. I mean, this is the dream gig for any film geek.
Totally.
And it's a show that we all created here at Popcorn Talk Network, and we love doing it. So we just need to keep the ratings going, keep sharing the YouTube videos, keep everything happening so that we can show all our guests, look, everyone's loving our show, and then hopefully we can get bigger and bigger and bigger guests.
And people chime in all the time. With suggestions, which is great. I love someone suggested the Coen brothers. A lot of people have been suggesting that we do composers like John Williams.
Yes, we will definitely do that.
Yes, we will definitely do it. It's on our list.
We haven't finished with Tim Burton just yet.
No, we haven't. We're at Fast Five number one.
Which is?
He also created a man. He gave him a heart, a brain, everything. Well, almost everything.
Edward Scissorhands. Alicia is brandishing the Edward Scissorhands bling from Hot Topic,
sleeves.
Hollywood and Highland in Hollywood.
Yeah,
so
I paid for it.
This movie, was released on December 7th, 1990. Cost $20 million to make. Made more than $86 million worldwide. And without question, this is Tim Burton's most personal film because Edward Scissorhands, the character, was for the misfit, for the outcast in all of us.
Mm.
And this was a character that Burton related to, especially when he was growing up.
I love the juxtaposition between suburbia and gothic horror. It's a fairy tale at the same time. It's really strange, but it's so sweet also. It was huge success critically and also commercially. And I feel like this is the reason why Burton is so special, to be able to pull off a movie like this about a guy with scissors for hands and have it be really sweet and touching and talk a lot about the dangers of conformity and how your differences make you special and magical rather than just weird and a freak.
Everything we talked about at the top of the show with regards to Tim Burton's movies being dark and gothic and kind of morbid, but also sweet and playful and funny and just gorgeous to look at.
Great stories.
Everybody was at the top of their game with this movie. Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, working for the first out of eight times with Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Colin Atwood, the costume designer. Danny Elfman, his score, which he said was one of his favorites as well.
It's beautiful.
I mean, this, and because of movies like Frankenweenie, his short, and of course he directed the full feature as well. But this was a film that was loosely inspired by Frankenstein.
You can see that.
You can see the inspiration there.
The creation that's not quite finished.
Well, do you know, just because of the way Edward Scissorhands looked, that who was originally considered to play the part of Edward Scissorhands? There were a few people.
Who?
I think you know one of them.
Edward has kind of Tim Burton hair.
He does have Tim Burton hair. Also, Robert Smith from The Cure.
Yeah, it looks a little like The Cure.
But I think you mentioned Tom Cruise.
Yes, yeah. Tom Cruise, actually, they got pretty far into production with Tom Cruise, apparently. But he dropped out when Tim Burton didn't want to butch Edward Scissorhands up. So he didn't want to make him more of a man, more masculine. He wanted him to be this weird, weird guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he went off into Days of Thunder instead.
Yes, which was very manly.
Very manly. But also considered for the part were Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Downey Jr.
I could see that.
And a character, a name that you mentioned before in our quiz show,
Michael Jackson. He wouldn't need any makeup.
Yeah, he would have walked in and been like, okay, let's go. Let's roll it.
I think he had the outfit as well. I also love seeing Anthony Michael Hall in the film. You know, he played the nerd in a lot of the John Hughes movies. And here he's the bully.
Wow.
He flipped around.
He totally flipped it around.
And Diane Wiest, so sweet.
Oh, she's really sweet.
And then Winona Ryder as a blonde Winona Ryder and Johnny Depp together. The chemistry.
And Kathy Baker. Very sexy role for Kathy Baker. I've never seen her try to, you know, play
the sexy MILF kind of cougar.
Totally. Yep, the cougar.
Yeah.
But this movie, I was actually curious because of the neighborhood Was it a set or was this a real neighborhood? It was actually a real neighborhood outside Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
I mean, they painted the houses.
Yeah, those 50s kind of suburban candy-colored houses, which are quite surreal.
It's the way the movie looks at suburbia and conformity, or lack of it, rather. But it's a movie that the ending is just so moving,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I hadn't seen the movie since it came out. It's been 25 years.
Mm.
And I just forgot how effective the end of that movie was. I was trying to think, would they have done that ending like that if they had filmed it today?
Yeah, well, would test audiences have said,
no, we want a happier ending.
Forever.
Give us a happier ending.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel Cushing, our regular profiler, who was a great writer and an awesome film critic, she says, Tim Burton is quite simply weird, but his most memorable movies mix a little emotion in with that weirdness, and the best of these is definitely Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm.
This film is both a fairy tale and a cautionary gothic story, and only Tim Burton can mix those two tones in such an artistic and effortless way. I believe this is Johnny Depp's best collaboration with Burton as a created and indelible character that everyone recognizes and relates to as well. Edward is every outsider, every persecuted kid, every misunderstood artist, and so his story will always resonate with viewers.
Matthew Adams says, I used to have a huge crush on Winona Ryder because of Edward Scissorhands. Who am I kidding? I still have a huge crush on Winona Ryder. Rachel Cushing says it is definitely her number one. Red Terror 66 says, if anyone hasn't seen Tim Burton's short film Vincent, they should look it up on YouTube after profiles. And I saw a funny one from Robbie Reed. If you haven't, you should all watch Edward Penishands. It will change your life forever.
Oh, that's the porn movie. I remembered that.
I worked at a video shop in Sydney, Australia, and that was one of the movies.
Was it one of the top rented movies?
Well, I had to rent it, obviously, to see what it was like, and it scarred me for life.
Wow, Edward Penishands.
Not our number one.
Not our number one. Edward Scissorhands is our number one.
Yes. Well, let's recap our Fast Five before we go.
Yes. Coming in at number five is Mars Attacks. Number four, Batman. Number three, Beetlejuice. Number two, Ed Wood. And number one, Edward Scissorhands.
We had to. And what a great episode. So great to talk to Tim Burton. I'm so glad that he made time for us.
That was really, really special.
Really special.
Great way to end 2014 with that interview.
And then start 2015
with a great, great show.
Yes.
So who do we have next week?
Ooh, let's listen, shall we?
Royal had lived in the Lindbergh Palace Hotel for 22 years.
Wes Anderson.
I
know I'm a huge fan of.
Yes.
So I look forward to making you rewatch all his movies and telling you exactly why I love him.
I'm looking forward to it. Wes Anderson is a filmmaker who I've admired, and I'm looking forward to liking him a whole lot more when we do our profiles on Wes Anderson. Next time, make sure you go to our Facebook page,
yes,
like it, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and make sure you subscribe to our videos on YouTube. Please spread the word about profiles. We're very, very grateful for your support. Until next time,
bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.